They wanted to have a week off, and we thought we'd have just the first and the agreement. Will Chairman Ron do the law outside of terms at which we continue to recognize that we continue to support the governments of the Republic of Vietnam. Now, the details are and they will be used, I'm sure, to some of you, are terribly boring and infinitely important because they're infinitely important because as you all know, all pieces are hard to these agreements, choose to call them what you on what you will, are hard to keep. You take Korea. Many of you have been up there in that Korean line. Many of you know, if you talk to this that here, 20 years after Korea, we still have influence. Not so many as we used to. Here the Americans are on one side and the others on the other side, and there they are, and they're still missing. And Korea, however, is really a big one compared to the guerrilla war situation where it's salt pepper in the country. There you have a lot. Here you've got units of the North Vietnamese and the VC throughout the country. And so enforcing the ceasefire, supervising the ceasefire, having it work is anything more difficult. And that is one of the reasons why the commissions, both the commissions within the country, where which we will describe, in which both the parties are concerned, and the international commissions, and how they operate are enormously important. I would say also this. There was one line in my talk last night, a couple lines that I will not go into any further detail. I know that you still picked up one. We do not specifically mention, for example, the Soviet Union. We do not mention the PRC as agreement. We're not going to talk about it either. To talk about either would completely or probably inevitably lead to forcing them into a position where restraint would not be possible. On the other hand, let me say, we are totally aware of the fact that restraint by all the major powers, including the United States, the PRC is infinitely important in order to make this work. And to the extent restraint is shown on their side, restraint will be shown on ours. I won't go beyond that except that base is being covered. It has been covered in the past, will be covered in the future. Is that a fair statement?
That is exactly.
And, but to examine us too closely on that and to say, what are we doing? Why don't we make a public statement? Why don't we do this and that? Let me say, the moment that you put, with the competition between those powers, either of them on a public spot, you are going to force them to say that they are not going to do anything, or they're going to compete with each other to continue to support the revolution. So that's the situation there. Now, the only point that I will cover, because I know that all of you are interested, both from a personal and emotional standpoint as I am, and you're all going to have letters and inquiries from constituents as the field of issue. Henry will elaborate on the details, but I want to cover briefly what my theory, which I covered last night with you, as to how that is going to work, and how we can now reveal it. Within 60 days, Saturday, all will be released, and at the same time, all of our own troops will be withdrawn. Now, the first will be released within 15 days. And about a fourth will be released at that time. Where people say, why do we wait 60 days? The point is that you have to make arrangements to do it. And also, we have to get our forces up at the same time. You see, it's a parallel deal. That's a straight treatment. But it's arranged 60 days. The arrangements for their reading, and this is one of the intricate things that we did work out very early on, are now just what we asked for. In October, they were not. there were conditions, the ratings, sorry. They will be released, for example, those held in North and Vietnam can cut off. American planes will be allowed, of course, to go in, medical, what they call medical, medevac planes will go in to pick them up. They will be flown from Hanoi to Vientiane, and that will be allowed to come. Now, for those held in South Vietnam, there are some in South Vietnam, arrangements will be made within the next week to 10 days as to the points at which they will be released. They will be released in South Vietnam. They will be released to the government of the United States and not to peace groups. And they will be flown, of course, just as expeditiously as possible, back here, probably in terms of places I have thought all this through totally, but I would imagine Guam, Hawaii, and then to the air base up in Northern California, I think. Those are details that we will work out as time goes on. On the
to look into dispute.
that's right.
Perhaps three of them. Three men. There are three held by the Chinese. We can only say that when I was there talking to Joe and Lai, when Mike and you were there, and when Jerry and Hale were there, assurances, well, to the extent that assurances can't be given, because at that point we couldn't know what was going to happen, that they would consider releasing those as soon as the war or the ceasefire, whatever we have, was achieved, were given. We have no information on that, and that, of course, is not covered in this agreement. But we had every reason to believe that those assurances would be given. The Downey case is a different one, I should point out. The Downey case involves CIA agents. For 20 years, it's been cut to five. We have discussed this case with Joe and Lai. I have did personally, and the others did as well. We're still hoping for the best there, but even at this point, it's had me served a pretty long time to get action on that. These are just, we're talking about one person, there are thousands, but I know that lots of people receive hundreds of letters over the months. So, all right, anyway, let's go again. And a summary of the main provisions of the agreements and of the protocols, as well as a map, which gives you the location of the various teams.
Would you agree, Mr. President, if I could take perhaps 5 minutes just on the evolution of how we got to where the evolution is a little simple? And then go into the agreement itself. December for reasons which we didn't discuss right now. The negotiations have reached an essential step. There was a great deal of speculation at the press that this airplane had been produced by this or that American demand, which could not be met, which they refused to meet. But this was actually not the case, because if it had been produced by anybody, we could have yielded. What produced this airplane, if we had wanted to, what produced this airplane in the middle of December, as of this moment, as of that moment, was the fact that they, for whatever reason, had decided to stall for time. And we could no sooner settle one issue than they raised another. And these issues became more and more frivolous. For example, there's one provision in this agreement that says that parties shall respect the neutrality of Laos and Cambodia, in every respect, the 1954 agreement, and so on, and so on. But on the last day of the meeting, they took out the word shall. So I said, why do you take out the word shall? They said, well, shall is in the future, we don't know when it starts. So I said, well, let's put in the word immediately. They said, well, we're respecting it, and we've respected it in the past, we're respecting it in the present, we'll respect it in the future. I said, can you explain to me why we should make an agreement that obliges you to do what you're already doing? And when you have troops in Laos and Cambodia, you say you're already respecting it. That's highly unreassuring to us. Well, this, I don't want to bore you with all the details. This was a 2-hour discussion. And never was resolved on that day. And there were 15 issues like this, from which the only conclusion to be drawn was not that we were in a substantive deadline, because these were not serious issues. And they disappeared in January. Nothing has ever been heard from them again. Well, they raised them, and they were held in an hour. They raised them because they were on the table, but once they started moving, they were settled
enough. I think it would be fair to say that when you went back in December, you expected, in fact, we talked about it, that there were two outstanding issues, as there were, that you could settle them in 2 days at the most. After the second day, you came. After the third day, after the fourth, after the fifth, after the sixth, after the seventh, after the eighth, you stayed 4 days.
And by the end of the 10 days, there was an absolute hopeless deadlock, a filibuster. And that was why in terms of your being able to make or our being able to make concessions on their new demands that weren't ours. couldn't make it fast enough.
Was that about?
There were two categories of problems.
There was substantive unconvention.
Yeah.
They wanted major concessions. For example, they were beginning to work themselves into a position where they were linking our prisoners to the release of civilian prisoners in South Vietnam. And since even the classification of prisoners in South Vietnam is a most hopeless undertaking as between who is in prison for criminal activity, who is in prison for political activity, and since there have been clear provisions in the agreement separating these categories, this would have been a major change.
Well, if we had links, if we had, for example, and that was laid down as a absolute condition, insofar as we could. But if we had linked the release of our prisoners to the release of civilian prisoners held by the government of South Vietnam or the Republic of Vietnam, we could, under no circumstances, have been able to deliver the South Vietnamese on that part of the market. Because they're not going to turn loose all their civilian prisoners in return for that. So that meant that our POWs, whatever deal we made for a ceasefire or anything else, would have been stuck there for months on end. That's why I said at the leaders' meeting the other day that they reject that when they attached conditions to the POW issue, we could not accept them. And now there are no conditions whatever on the POW issue. It's a flat-out deal.
So there were major issues, and there were all these frivolous issues that they kept raising, which, as I said, they kept raising faster than we could settle them. And so there was a substantial deadline. The major issues were how would we sign the agreement, which I'll explain in a minute, is a matter of great importance to the South Vietnamese. What is the status of the people in the Rai themselves, and how do we handle the existence of two political entities in a country that's recognized basically as one? That was the situation in the middle of December. And finally, there was a total, absolute deadlock on the international machinery. On the last day of our meetings in December, they gave us their version of the protocols. The protocols are the implementing instruments of the basic agreement that spell out in detail the technical provisions of the supervisory machinery and major business and similar matters. What they proposed for the international machinery was a force of 250, of which half had to be located in Saigon, which had no organic communication, ability to conduct an investigation without the concurrence of the offending party, and which was dependent even for its necessity, even for its suitcase. On the party in whose area it was functioning, and which did not have a budget of its own. Now, we could not have asked a self-respecting country to serve on that, nor did this have to perform any function. Moreover, they wanted to place them in the headquarters of their military legions, as they defined the military legions. And I could go into more detail. It was a totally objectionable, insulting protocol that we could never have had an international machinery on that basis. Secondly, they proposed, and we had agreed to, a two-party commission between the two South Vietnamese parties to take care of the day-to-day contact. But the way they defined it, a communist team would have been put into every district town of South Vietnam with complete freedom of movement, and with a complete ability to interfere in every aspect of life, and it would have been a way of spreading the communist presence throughout South Vietnam, that again could not be accepted. So we were in a total standstill with respect to the program. But before we resumed talks, in fact, we told them, one, that all political elements had to be removed from protocols, that the protocols could only be technical instruments. Secondly, that nothing could be in the protocols that was inconsistent with the basic agreement. Thirdly, that we wanted serious talks and not these frivolous exchanges in December. And we had to say, but they resumed
technical drops and tracks it through. And those went very slowly through it, but it did not insult it. And we assumed the main torque and track to the edge.
And I have had more enjoyable days in my life than that first day.
It's good to know it's reading to me after the Now, if you don't say, where shall Vietnam begin?
This is a meaningless phrase. And if you don't establish a demarcation line where the international community can operate,
you are giving with one hand and taking away with the other. So we wanted to establish a demilitarized zone, not so much as a permanent political frontier, but as a dividing line which separated the entity South Vietnam from the entity North Vietnam for as long as these two countries were not unified by the processes which I wanted.
And the dividing line, if I may add, is, as you already implied,
the dividing line was the important, not from the standpoint of sovereignty or foreign esoteric, anything like that, but important from the standpoint of having the infiltration, which of course would lead to a resumption of the war, police in some way. You don't have any dividing line, you've got nothing to cross. And it was that was the key point. Our concern was not the sovereignty. Our concern basically was to have some way whereby your supervisory commissions and so forth could say, now, you don't go across this line into here, or otherwise the war just erupts again.
Yeah, if the demilitarized zone had been abolished, which is more or less what the North Vietnamese proposed, then the provisions of the agreement would have applied only to Irish, and they would have been unilateral restrictions on the South, on the Saigon government, and on us. But they could not have been applied in practice to the communists in South Vietnam, nor to the North Vietnamese. So this was a matter of great practical importance, not a matter of theoretical importance. And that is an issue that has now been settled, satisfactorily. Now, perhaps, Mr. President, I should do two things. Perhaps I should go briefly through the agreement and explain what it contains. If you could go through those basic things that you said, those highlights that we did, and then go ahead. I'll go through this, the agreement. And perhaps I could explain what we said in October we were trying to get the status of each of these points now is.
Good.
And then I'll explain very briefly the protocols and that's any questions which you have. The nine basic chapters of the agreement. The first one is simply an assertion that the 1954's agreements with respect to the territorial integrity, sovereignty, and unity of Vietnam are reaffirmed by the United States and all other countries. Before I get into this, I have to explain one, before I get into some sense, explain one procedure that is going to create some confusion, which has to do with the sign. As you know, the Saigon people do not recognize the communists as a government in South Vietnam. Therefore, we had the problem of once again this document signed by all four bodies without implying recognition by Saigon of the NLF as a governmental entity. And we finally hit on a solution of grayish, which is it, which may produce some confusion. We produced two documents. One document doesn't refer to anybody. It simply says the parties of the conference in Paris, the parties of the Paris conference. It doesn't mention the U.S., North Vietnam, DRC, and Saigon. It just says the parties of the conference. And that will be signed on Saturday morning by the four foreign ministers. We at Saigon are going to sign on one page. The two communist parties are going to sign on another page, which preserves the character of the Paris Conference as a two-sided conference. So they don't have to sign on the same page, and nobody mentions anybody else. This sounds simple, as it was about 3 days or back. In the afternoon, Phil Rogers and the Foreign Minister of North Vietnam are going to sign another document, in which neither Saigon nor the communist participants, in which it says the United States with the concurrence of
coming out of the DRG, with the concurrence of the DRG, makes the following agreement. And that's only signed by the Secretary of State and the Foreign Minister of the DRG. That document doesn't bind the South Vietnamese part. It's word for word the same thing.
Same document.
It's exactly the same thing, word for word, except that the preamble is different. The practical consequences, it is a compromise. What the Saigon people and the DRG are legally obligated to carry out is the document which doesn't mention anybody's title. The communists, on the other hand, got the signature on a document which lists the title, although Bradley has no particular legal forward, because we can sign a document saying, we can write a document saying the United States with the concurrence of Outer Mongolia, and that doesn't bind Outer Mongolia. So if you read about the fact, or if you notice that two documents are going to be signed, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, that is the compromise between the position of the two South Vietnamese parties that didn't want to recognize each other and the insistence of the DRV that some reference be made. And the only difference in the two documents is the preamble and the signature. Obligation it is in the first document. I mention it only because you will see that there are two documents floating around, but they're word for word in the operative paragraphs the same. And in the operative paragraphs, none of the parties are mentioned. It just says the parties are obligated to do the following. Now, as to the substance of the Christian line, this is chapter, the first chapter, the first.
What about the withdrawal of North Vietnamese forces?
I'll get into that.
I'll come to later.
Okay.
introduction.
Of new personnel. There's of new military personnel.
There's a prohibition against the use of Cambodian and Laotian base areas.
There's a prohibition against the use of infiltration routes through Cambodia and Laos.
And there is a prohibition.
And there is a prohibition against the movement of military units across the demilitarized zone. If all of these provisions are carried out,
then it is everybody's judgment.
But first of all, no new North Vietnamese forces can then be introduced insofar as an agreement cannot be legally introduced.
And they come around, you say, across the DMZ, but can they introduce forces on their flanks?
They cannot come into Cambodia. There is a total prohibition against forces going into Cambodia at Laos. They have to be withdrawn from Cambodia at Laos. They cannot come across the DMZ.
And in addition, there is a prohibition against the introduction of personnel by any other means that we may not have covered in the agreement.
It's free on the existing North Vietnamese forces.
It's free on the existing North Vietnamese forces.
Now, the second place, there is a prohibition that they are requiring the people belonging to existing forces without specifying them as North Vietnamese as soon as possible, which is linked to other political provisions. And therefore, there is no possibility, if they cannot augment their forces, it's everybody's judgment
that they will have to be, at the minimum, be a substantial attrition of the North Vietnamese forces, unless they massively violate the agreement.
Well, how many forces are in? What's your estimate now? Because this will become a central question.
How many North Vietnamese within the borders of South Vietnam now?
What's our estimate?
Our estimate has been about 140,000 of 45,000, of which the vast majority, not the vast majority, but of which about 40%, 35% are in northern military region 1, within about 30 miles of the North Vietnamese frontier.
And what about Zone 3 adjacent to Saigon?
Zone 3 adjacent to Saigon, our estimate is that they have about 15,000 to 20,000.
And is the idea that they will not be augmented or supplied, and therefore this is a kind of a face-saving thing that they will, in effect, leave?
They cannot be augmented. They cannot send replacements down there. They cannot replace men that are sick, wounded, and just.
Can they supply them?
They can supply them only if they replace equipment.
No, but I'm talking about food, basic logistics.
Not legally.
Well, is the idea that
the idea is that this agreement, if it is observed, could produce an attrition of the forces in the south.
Well, if they're cut off, they'd have to withdraw.
If this is a base saving
device for them, is it? Which they quietly.
They have not, their problem has been that
they're there.
They have never admitted that they were there. For them to admit that they had forces there, all they could have done was withdraw them. Would it be
amazing?
Let us understand on this point that this question is raised to by the community. It has been raised. But I am quite confident. The government of South Vietnam would not have come along unless they had, having asked the same question, had concluded that if the agreement were observed, the attrition and so forth would set in. That being the key. So in other words, all of these things are going to be implemented. What are you going to send new men in when people get sick? Intricately tied in there together, that it at least gives reassurance in South Vietnam what was necessary.
The forces they have there now are of low morale, poor equipment, and really broken down into very small units as a result of attrition. Therefore, if they cannot be resupplied except for replacements, and if they cannot get, because for the replacement of equipment, and if they can
assuming that the various provisions of this agreement are carried out, that in the non-military areas, some incentives may develop for the North to have some of these people go back. That country is denuded at the present time. If I could spend one word on cash, which ours this week were two. Last week were two. And so we say the war must be over. The North Vietnamese and the South Vietnamese are losing 1,000 every week right now. And we'll, in the probably go over 1,000 in the next couple of days, over at the rate of 1,000 a week, because these countries just step up and they're trying to grab terror. So the war is on now. When you look at what the North Vietnamese have lost, they need these people. And the question is whether or not whether or not their intent, and that's the key point here, whether their intent is to build up for another pocket, or whether their intent now for a period of time is to recoup in the North, reestablish, and so forth. And I think that will come to a later point of time.
People are considering for a while, and they might even have a passion, getting a written commitment for the withdrawal of some forces. But when you do that, then you're implying that the remaining forces have a right to aid it. And as it is now, there is nothing in the agreement that gives the North Vietnamese a right to be in South Vietnam. And we thought it is for our legal position better not to have any provision in there that implies that there are any North Vietnamese forces in the South, that you get a sort of a half-baked solution that pulls 10,000 out, because the basic issue is precisely the one that the President mentioned. Even if they had agreed to withdraw, if they want to re-infiltrate and break the agreement, they can do it. It would only have about 3 months to their readiness time. Everything therefore depends on whether we can induce them through the pressure of their allies, through targeted programs that we are developing, and through other means, whether we can induce them to observe the agreement. If they observe the agreement, the provisions about the DNC, about Laos and Cambodia, and against infiltration, make it impossible for them to maintain a substantial force there.
That is why I use the term that we will make major efforts for reconciliation of the North. Now that term was quite deliberately worked out. We're not going to spell out specifically at this point what it means, but basically it's headed in one direction, and of course there's headed in another direction. But when you look at all various provisions, we have to bear in mind, and get down to the key point as to whether the North and frankly the South, but it is particularly the North, whether the North wants at this point to return to peacetime activities after 25 years of enormous attrition. If I can ask you in the negotiating detail as to this bill, you give a feel for what that intention may be. Now, first of all, these are the first part of the most cardinal factors that I've ever seen. So, we are not talking here about choir boys, but I think for their own reasons, suffering is very the South of Cardinals being boys and one, the exhaustion of the war, they have believed that they may want to observe this agreement for a while. And there's some collateral evidence for this. For example, that we established there are three legal crossing points into Vietnam for each side. That is 3 points in which military equipment can be introduced. Now everybody in this room knows that if they want to, at that long frontier, they can see equipment is there and it's going to be very tough to find it. But they have for 2 seaports and 1 crossing point that is demilitarized zone, which indicates that they really do not want to come through Laos and Cambodia. And secondly, they asked whether for a 60-day period they could use 1 crossing point from Laos and Cambodia, because they have 6 stockpiles of equipment in Laos and Cambodia, which they can use all the way up into North Vietnam
place, because if they had wanted to sneak it into South Vietnam, it would not be all that hard to do, particularly in the confusion of the vehicles to appealing for the machinery of supervision.
You better get on with this thing.
Can I just have one question? Sure. Paragraph 2 on the ceasefire, where both sides can replace that. What is the word? Can replace equipment?
What the provision says is they can replace equipment that is damaged, destroyed, used up, or worn out.
We're talking about forces.
There is a flat prohibition. Military forces cannot be replaced. There's no new military forces can be introduced into South Vietnam from the outside. That is unconditional, flat, and there are no exceptions whatsoever. That all infiltration is permissible. That is totally unacceptable. There's no exceptions there. Now let me go through there. So,
let me say, you understand,
that this restraint is on the South, too.
Yes. But they, as far as their military,
equipment is concerned.
No new equipment.
This must be replacement of what they have. Yes, they cannot augment their equipment, but in terms of personnel, the South can increase its army as long as it recruits people from South Vietnam. But no forces from the outside can be introduced. We don't expect it to happen. We expect the South to increase its army. But the restrictions on infiltration apply only to forces coming in from the outside of South Vietnam. Now, Chapter 3, dealing with the return of captured military personnel and foreign civilians, that has three clauses. The President has covered two of them. One is that all U.S. Military personnel and civilians will be returned within 60 days. It will be in roughly equal tranches every 15 days. They'll be returned in Hanoi, except for those prisoners that are in the southernmost part, that be in full accounting for missing in action. And there will be teams established and have the right to investigate grave sites and so forth. There is a third part of this which separates the issue of civilians, South Vietnamese civilians that are held in prison by both sides, and in which provides that the two South Vietnamese parties will negotiate. Very hopeful one in an atmosphere of reconciliation and comfort. The release of each other's civilian prisoners.
I wouldn't want to be a civilian prisoner.
And that they will do their utmost to accomplish this within 3 months. The practical consequence of this is that Madame Binh was not one of the winners of this negotiation, because it means that the attackers of the and that they have to have a subsequent negotiation with the South Vietnamese government.
And the two must agree
about their release, and the two must agree, and that this is another important letter that the South Vietnamese have with respect to negotiating with troops, because they will undoubtedly take the position that they cannot release via consular prison and augment hostile forces unless there is some progress towards the demobilization provision.
Well, I can only say that it's much better than they have those 40,000 or whatever there are. But the prisoner itself in the South Vietnamese government, better to have the South Vietnamese government negotiating with Madison and holding our DOWs hostage.
That's exactly right. Our concern was not to keep those prisoners in necessarily. Our concern was not to get involved in the negotiation about the release of the South Vietnamese prisoners. And one of the things that the President was adamant about was that we should separate those two issues. And if we had not, we would have been involved in an endless discussion.
To separate the military from the civilian prisoners, that takes me to
that's a critical point that we had to insist on in December.
Exactly. What is how you classify these prisoners?
Incidentally, that was something that had been agreed upon in October.
And we agreed which the United States and the Northern Vietnam jointly maintain, which is not of great significance because they speak of the South of South Vietnam as an agitation. They say that the South Vietnamese people's right of self-determination is sacred, inalienable, and shall be respected by all countries. And the DRV subscribes to that. It speaks of the South Vietnamese right of self-determination, and it says foreign countries shall not impose any political tendency. But I don't want to go through every provision. The basic provision is that there will be free elections at a time to be mutually agreed upon between the two South Vietnamese parties, for offices to be mutually agreed upon by the two South Vietnamese parties. And that these elections, once they are agreed upon by the two South Vietnamese parties, will be under international supervision. There will be said that must be that's the role of unanimity for parties. This means in effect since the two South Vietnamese parties have to agree to it. It means that's agreed. They have to agree. But then there is an institution set up called the National Council of Reconciliation and Concord.
Let me just say, I was not trying to just have a play on words. The important thing to remember there is, and this is true throughout the political section, as Henry correct me if I'm wrong, that the decisions that are made with regard to the future of the South and the South Vietnam are decisions that are not imposed. They are decisions that the government of the Republic of Vietnam must agree. That has been its fundamental point. As government, the Republic of Vietnam, none of these things go against the particular
agreement. There can be no effective
policy. That's a very important point, of course, with the South Vietnamese government of Vietnam. Let me say one other thing. In this agreement that it worked out. The reason the North could sign when we referred to the South Vietnamese, and the reason we could sign is for them, the South Vietnamese means two of them. To us, we only recognize, and I find that was a deliberate phrase last time, we only recognize in South Vietnam as a legitimate government, the Republic of Vietnam. But you see, the South Vietnamese, the reason, and many of you, great credit, the skillful way of getting that phrase used. He's now got it used in South Vietnam. To us, it means the Republic of Vietnam, but the North it means something else, correct, Henry?
Yes,
but they are, by the sense that they aren't recognizing the government as such. They're recognizing the area as such.
No, they recognize two governments. We recognize only one government. They recognize two governments.
That's what I mean. They recognize two. That's what I mean.
But this, you mentioned the NLF specifically in this particular part of the
agreement.
No.
The NLF is never mentioned in that old document.
But you said
in the document, it just says the two South Vietnamese parties. It never mentions the NLF throughout the document.
Throughout
either document in the operative clauses.
Preamble.
In the two parties in which is the document, the NLF is mentioned in the preamble.
But that's not something
that's not something that the South Vietnamese have designed. And even when it's mentioned in the preamble, it's not mentioned as a party, it just says with the concurrence of.
And so that's about
it took
3 days.
Go ahead.
Now, in addition, they set up an institution called the National Council of Reconciliation. The National Council,
it's important that you understand this one in terms of a lot of misunderstanding that probably misunderstanding some deliberately isn't agreed. But and to their credit, the North Vietnamese have given some reason in October. There was a thought that the National Council of Reconciliation was actually a coalition government. It is not. It isn't even a government at all. It's a non-governmental institution. But this is another thing that took us some time to negotiate.
little Floyd, because that three words that Vietnamese for administrative, one of which is the same as governmental. So in Vietnamese, it read like a governmental structure of power. We had meant it to imply that it was something less than a government. Well, once we realized that they had pulled this maneuver on us in the Vietnamese text, we insisted that this be deleted or conformed to our notion of administrative. And that took us a few days.
And now, on another word, it didn't have freedom.
Well, actually, they have eliminated. We've now dropped the whole phrase. We just said that they created a National Council of Reconciliation. And we won't use the word administrative structure. It's now dropped.
But it is important.
The word administrative structure doesn't appear anymore.
Who's on it?
Well, the administrator. First of all, it doesn't exist yet.
No, but I mean, who's permitted to be?
Well, let me explain how it comes. First of all, that has to be negotiated in an atmosphere of reconciliation and conflict between the two South Vietnamese parties, who will do their utmost to bring it into being in a three-month period. Now, they're not obligated to bring it into being at all. They're just obligated to do their utmost. Who is on it? It is appointed equally by both sides. From each side nominates four people, which they call their own. The 12 members, each side nominates four people, which they call their own. And then they each nominate two people they call neutralists. But at any rate, each side nominates six people. The council operates on the principle of unanimity. And the only thing it has to do is to supervise elections that previously had to be agreed upon between the two parties. So my prediction as a political scientist is that it is not going to come into being in the first week of this agreement. And that it will not exhaust itself in activity much into being.
Never in all history have so many fictions been put together in one document.
Frankly,
I mean, one area,
but frankly, gentlemen, this is a big lead to enable them to get off their demand for a coalition government. And this is why my advanced temper has been so extremely foul in recent weeks, and why they refused to come to the airport when he got told it to them to Paris. Because in effect, this means that the demand for a coalition government has been dropped, that the essential decisions about the political future of South Vietnam will be made by the existing South Vietnamese authorities, which means, of course, that that we have achieved what the president has always said, that we would not impose a political solution on South Vietnam. There is another allow, you see, it does provide for a device where all people in South Vietnam, which we have always said, could participate in the political process, including on the other hand, if the two South Vietnamese parties do want to get together, and if they do want to have elections, this provides a mechanism for them to have it. It doesn't block it, it just doesn't impose it. Finally, there is a provision in this chapter about the political future of South Vietnam calling for the reduction and decentralization of existing military forces and then demobilization, which is, and this is not done in terms of UNMOS, this is done in terms of these are the major provisions of the political chapter. Then the next chapter, 5, deals with the relation of North and South Vietnam to each other. It states that the unification of Vietnam shall be carried out by peaceful means on the basis of discussions and agreements between North and South Vietnam without coercion and annexation, without military pressure. And the time for reunification will be agreed upon between North and South Vietnam. Second, pending reunification, it reaffirms the military demarcation line.
shall respect the demilitarized zone
on either side of the provisional military demarcation line.
That is, in other words, an unconditional recognition of the demilitarized zone.
And that is for North and South Vietnam promptly start negotiations with a view towards re-establishing normal relations in various fields.
And it has another clause in there which says they may discuss the business movement across the demilitarized zone
and agree upon
every one question. And by the way, it means that military movement is strictly prohibited in two clauses.
Well, that was basically like the Berlin situation, you see, or the pressure.
But the one thing I want to say is this point. When you use the term North and South Vietnam there,
does this imply that the government of North Vietnam, the DRV, is talking about the government of South Vietnam, or just the two governments?
Mr. President, we have two separate problems. One is with who governs in South Vietnam. The second is, does South Vietnam exist? Now, we did not make any attempt to get the DRV to get into the question of which is the legitimate government of South Vietnam, because that they could not do. But throughout the agreement, and I could enumerate that when we're through, we have an explicit recognition by North Vietnam that South Vietnam exists, and that certain acts by North Vietnam against South Vietnam are prohibited. And for the purposes of the international situation, that is to say, for the purposes of infiltration, definition of aggression, and of course, the mere fact that there is a legal recognition of an entity called South Vietnam, whose right of self-determination has to be respected, against which it is impermissible to use force, whose sovereignty, there are three different references to the sovereignty of South Vietnam with respect to the International Control Commission, with respect to the conduct of foreign policy. With respect to the relationship between Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam, in each case of which it is said these provisions have to be carried out with regard to the sovereignty of South Vietnam. So that the question of the existence of South Vietnam for the purposes of this agreement has been fully covered. And that was even more important at that stage than to settle the question of which is the legitimate government. Because whichever is the legitimate government, if there is a South Vietnam, and if it has attributes of sovereignty, then the North Vietnamese have no business being there. Whoever the legitimate government may be.
Well, their existence is really established by the establishment of a demarcation.
Exactly. These issues are already not related, but on top of this, we have these explicit references in the agreement.
Could I ask, as I understand, the DNC is now occupied fully by North Vietnamese forces. Are there any provisions for them to withdraw from there so that the DNC needs anything more than this statement?
Well, there's an international control team has been given the responsibility of implementing the program with respect to the demilitarized zone, and it will be located right at the demilitarized zone.
While we're on that, I think this will be a big question. Where will the rest of the line be? It's a standstill in place.
Yes, sir. The rest of the line was not taken by us. That will be determined by the military commanders in the field. It will be determined, in other words, by the existing military situation in South Vietnam.
On January 27th.
On January 27th, which in fact will mean that 90% of the population will be under GVM control.
But right now, from the standpoint of the current military situation, how much of South Vietnam land-wise will be in the hands of North Vietnam?
What will happen in fact is
assuming that it remains reasonably stable between now and Saturday.
If it remains reasonably stable between now and Saturday, at least 90% of the population will wind up in the GDS. Sorry,
land-wise
territory. In terms of land, what will happen is that there will be big areas of the land in which neither side has forces. In the Central Highlands, for example, it's going to be very difficult to establish a clear, line of demarcation. But even there, our judgment is that almost by definition, since the South Vietnamese have an army of over a million, and since they're out spreading it out, and since the communists have an army of less than 200,000, 200,000+, they cannot possibly cover as much territory as, so we would take 70% of the territory.
70%?
Guaranteeing and controlling how much no man's land, so to speak.
Well, there will be areas such as in the Central Islands in which it is going to be extremely difficult to establish a clear line, but there's no population there, there's nobody there.
Well, what about in Zone 3?
In Zone 3, you mean in Military Region 3S, we would expect that about 90%+ of Military Region 3 will be in the hands of the government.
Geographically and
geographically. There'll be enclaves near the Cambodian border, and there will be the Saigon River corridor where there are some base areas. And let's be frank about this, especially about Zone 3 in this group. In June, we sent General Haig to Saigon and said, we want you to know that if a ceasefire is offered, we'll accept it to clear out as much of the territory that we put in the camp. On August 15th, the President sent me to Saigon to present the state of the negotiations. And he said, if there's a ceasefire offered, we will accept it, then we'll clear out as much of the territory as we possibly can. There are four South Vietnamese divisions in Military Region 3, of which only one has been consistently used. Two have never been used. So if it is impossible for us in a negotiation to achieve in a negotiation what he has not been able to do in combat, there are only about 18,000 North Vietnamese forces against close to 100,000 South Vietnamese forces in Military Region 3. Like all ceasefires, you cannot achieve in a negotiation what isn't achieved on the battlefield. Basically, the vast majority of Military Region 3 territorially will be under our control, though it will be under the control of the Saigon government. There is the difficulty that the Saigon army refuses to go into communist base areas, so that there are a few enclaves there which they have refused to enter for 6 months. And there's absolutely nothing we can do about those except to seal them off. But it's not large in territory. We would prefer to have them cleared out. But that it's not a question of
joy. Can only help those that don't.
So, that is, if on Military Region 3, we have gone to enormous lengths. They have a general in charge. We can be honest here, it is true. One problem. The unwillingness to use the forces there in such a way that the islands have so many losses that they'll be become a more astronomical, mm-hmm. that they'll get so proficient that they may get it into their head to march into Saigon. That's the problem in military region 3, has been. Military region 4 is an excellent trade. Military
power, which is rich.
One is in the reasonably good trade. In military region 3, with that limitation, is also in good shape.
Well, that's why I asked the question, because it's a matter of real concern. A lot of the judgment.
You anticipate there'll be a lot of fighting between now and Saturday to try to
do it? Saturday, the communists have been given instructions to seize as much territory as they can. But our judgment is that they don't. They can't seize a lot of territory. They more have to lose territory than to seize it. So then there's a long section, chapter 6, that deals with international controls, which I will deal with in discussing the protocols, which is repeated in the protocols and which I won't cover. Then there's the next chapter deals with Laos and Cambodia. We consider that extremely important. It says the parties participating in the Paris Conference shall strictly respect the 1954 agreements in Cambodia and the 1962 agreement on Laos. In other words, those two agreements are reassured and again, and they shall strictly respect the neutrality of Cambodia and Laos. Then it says the parties participating in the Paris Conference undertake to refrain from using the territory of Cambodia and the territory of Laos to encroach on the sovereignty and security of one another and of other countries. So you have in that sentence A, a recognition of sovereignty, and B, a flat prohibition against the use of unconditional prohibition against the use of paid air. The next provision is for the withdrawal of all foreign forces from Laos and Cambodia, and for the reaffirmation of their neutrality. So you have in there a reaffirmation of the 54 and 62 accords, an abolishment of base areas, and a flat agreement to the withdrawal of foreign forces. Now let me say one other thing. The agreement would only put those provisions which the parties to the agreement are in a position themselves to enter. But as all of you gentlemen know, there's a civil war on top of this going on in both Laos and Cambodia. Now, for obvious reasons, we cannot go into the detail of what we believe will happen. But we have every reason to believe that within a matter of a few weeks, there will be a formal ceasefire in Laos. And we have every reason to believe that in a somewhat messier way, there will be a de facto ceasefire over a slightly longer period of time in Cambodia. Now, this could not be written into the agreement because the Laotian and Cambodian parties are not signatories to this agreement, and because in the Cambodian case, one of the parties is headquartered in Peking. As you all know, Prince Sihanouk has displayed the extraordinary phenomenon of a royal prince conducting a civil war from a communist capital. And Sihanouk is being used by the Chinese against Hanoi. And I have the impression from my talks with the North Vietnamese that they dislike him more than we do. So here we have to set up a three-quarter negotiation to get that situation formally quieted down. But the parties to this agreement have undertaken obligations to quiet it down. On our side, you will see some definite physical actions to stop the war in Cambodia. And we have reason to believe that a de facto ceasefire will emerge in Cambodia. We have every reason to believe that a formal ceasefire will emerge in Laos. So that when the president referred to an Indochina ceasefire, he was reflecting the reality of the situation. Not only the only one we can speak more categorically about it, because it doesn't involve a third party. Well, it involves, you know, they run the string people too, but it doesn't involve a third party. It's
I would say, Henry, would you not, that at the time that our first POWs go out to Vientiane, that the possibility that might be fairly close to that period? Probably can't be sure. I want to just not to interrupt the briefing, but we showed the leaders last night a historical document of some interest. When we started on the people wondered, what does that mean? And of course, it means that at that point, after the consultation and so forth and so on, and there was a time yesterday where I sent the message to Henry. I said, go ahead and initial. It's a deal. He initials lead up to, of course, had authority to initial. And that was the deal. The deal was made. The formal documents could be signed on Saturday by all parties. And the initial document is here, so if you'd like to see it, I will pass it around. But each of you look at the initial page, but it's just, it's going to add to your knowledge of the things that show you whether this is in the right or not.
Reconciliation, etc.
could be that they desire good relations with the United States because of what we can do for them. That's what, and I just want to read my law. It would not be useful if the leaders are in education. Now that this change is over, we will not even listen to the idea of, when I spoke of efforts toward reconciliation, to the idea of any economic program, cooperation, or assistance with North Vietnam. Let me say, when we make such efforts, and when I recommend that Congress such efforts, we're not prepared yet to do so. We will not be simply for the purpose of helping them. I mean, that will be a byproduct. But it will be, in my opinion, the best thing, the lasting peace, which we need, because it will be a restraint on them, and it's necessary for them to keep the peace.
Is that a fair statement? Absolutely. It's feasible. And as you know, incidentally, if this is known, it should be no news to any of you, and it was no news to them. I added in my speech of 1969, and I put in the January 25th speech that we would help with the reconstruction and so forth and so on.
Mr. President, will the Russians and the Chinese also be willing to help, and will there be incentives for them to keep the peace?
We have reason to think so. Up to this point, the Russians and the Chinese each watching each other, and neither wanting to get caught not supporting, you know, a great revolutionary. Now at this point, with this thing ended, we don't know what they're thinking right now in the Kremlin or in Beijing. But obviously, our diplomatic efforts will be directed toward getting them to assist in this kind of a program as well. Whether with us or especially remains to be seen. Is that a fair statement?
I think, as the president, when he was in China, as in Moscow, his best vision comes to this. Make us believe that when the war is over, they will be receptive to proposals of this kind.
Mr. Price,
it won't be this
let me say, before you go on, from this point, too, you have to remember that the Russians don't want the Chinese to dominate in China. The Chinese don't want the Russians to dominate. And of course, neither want us to, and we don't want. So the question there is, what is the best interest of everybody concerned? The best interest of everybody concerned, it would seem, is to have mutual restraint, and so that the North will look to its own thing and not extend its dominating over the balance of the because the other thing the Chinese have to be concerned about, knowing the North Vietnamese, how strong and tough and vigorous they are, they have them not only dominate the 50 million people in China, but the 30 or 40 million that are in Thailand as well. Could be something on their southern flank that they wouldn't want to call. These are factors that I think that are entering into their minds. I'm not indicating them. I would not want to give any impression of Joe Meyer or Mao. I think we could read between lines a bit about
this. There are two facts that are interesting and suggestive. One is the Russians have continued to recognize Long Gold and have continued to maintain the government of Haiti that they had an ambassador or charge in North Vietnam throughout this whole period. Secondly, when Madame Lin was received by Mao a few weeks ago, she received an honor that has never been shown to Rita or to any other member of the North Vietnam Politburo, passing through Peking, which suggests that whatever the Chinese might want, they prefer four Indo-Chinese countries to one monolith at their southern frontier, and therefore, as peace is restored, the possibility for diplomacy to fire out the situation would be considered.
The question having been raised, though, let me be, because I have read with the leaders, it's very candid. This would be easy. They talk about, I think, perhaps the North Vietnamese, and the North Vietnamese, maybe a month more. negotiate with, but that's an indication of character because it's on both sides. On both sides. It's also reflections in the Chinese and I'm sure the issue with and either we so what I'd like to say is what I just I think we're more reasonable than they do. The point I'm gonna say is if we're not gonna indicate that it's all gonna be peaches and cream, there aren't gonna be any violations of the ceasefire, the Russians and Chinese are gonna go along and the actual will make a statement today that will be very conciliatory and so forth and so on. After what you said last night, you know, Joe's got to come out and say something. And you know, I'm talking about victory. You know, I'm talking about victory. And one of the Russians is trying to release their public statements. They say one thing and they may do something else. What I am saying is that the United States, your government, the Trump administration, I can assure you, would use every influence we have to bear to get the Russians and the Chinese, each of whom want something from us. And we want something from them to cooperate with us in seeing that this part of the world, which for 25 years has been corrupted by war, Japanese, civil war, and so forth, finally has a period of peace. And that's what it's really all about. You've raised a very pertinent question. We're not going in there and saying, well, the big U.S. is going to do the whole job. China's never responsible. Russia's never responsible.
Well, Mr. President, I just think we are faced up to the hard facts of life. The American people are hoping that this mess in South Vietnam is over and that the cost of the war will be over and that the defense budget can be drastically cut. And the bitter medicine in this whole thing, and I think it's inevitable, I'm not saying that, the bitter medicine is that we've got to come out with billions of dollars to support I believe even LBJ earlier, and I think you on previous occasions have said we've got to spend a billion or more to rehabilitate South Vietnam. And then this is going to present all manner of trouble in view of the fiscal situation in the country. And the American people are going to be upset at the end of the war and keep on giving billions of dollars over a long period to South Vietnam and then the aliens to North Vietnam. And that's a bitter situation. And when we put that in the defense budget, it's going to be bad. I think we put it in the foreign aid bill. And the foreign aid bill is supposed to apply to the bill we have. But defense is in such trouble that I don't think we've got to put it in defense. And the uprising among the rank and file man on Main Street against rebuilding North Vietnam and Hanoi is going to be bad. It's going to be a hell of a situation. Now, they're happy today, but they'll be getting drunk as hell and please go back and find out the facts of life.
Well, I remember, George, when you and I were on the herd committee, we knew it was going to be damned unpopular to ask for that war to pour those billions of dollars into Europe, and we had to come back and sell it because it was a good investment in peace. Let me also say, however, there's a question of doubts. The question is here, Paris, yes, there will be some expenditures for economic and other purposes in this part of the world, but it's going to be one hell of a lot less than the expenditures of continuing this war. That's the point. So you're going to have some out of your budget.
Something, but it's going to be good. The President, may I inquire?
We give this aid so long as there are North Vietnam troops in South Vietnam. If we begin giving this aid before they withdraw,
the situation, this is a matter, of course, that the point that should be made is this, that say, any assisting old girl in the north, obviously, is conditioned on keeping the peace. That's the key point.
Well, sometimes condition is broken.
But their progress is gone.
The first evidence of good faith is to get their troops out of the
country. The point is, I think the very fact that
and which is premature, so we're not sure what we're talking about yet. But when that time comes, I will present the facts. I think you will see, in my view, that as far as what truths remain there, that will be a major factor in having us move. Investigate
certain types of activities. Secondly, international commission. The international commission is composed of Canada, Hungary, Indonesia, and Poland. It is spread all over the country. It has a headquarters team in Saigon. There are 7 regional teams. There are 3 teams for the immediate Saigon area in addition to the headquarters team. There are 26 teams stationed in localities throughout South Vietnam, and I may say one of our achievements is that we station these teams not in the centers of population, but where there is military activity. We will hand out maps by which you can see there are 12 teams at border and coastal points. There are seven teams for the return of prisoners, which after the prisoners are returned will be available for the assignment to other duties. And there are 7 teams for legal points of entry for the replacement of armaments, which makes it a total of 63 teams throughout the country. It's a total force of 11 single units, the vast majority of which are inspectors, with the idea being that the support personnel will be locally recruited from the Vietnamese, that is, you know, cooks, guards, and so forth. They have freedom of movement. They theoretically operate on the basis of unanimity. But minority reports can be submitted so that if Canada or Indonesia spots a violation, it can report it, even though it won't be a commission report, but it will be then the report of one of the commissioners. They can obtain their own equipment and their own communication. And they can make their own budget. It was a bloody brawl. And we finally adopted a formula which was drawn from the German Constitution of 1871, if I may say so, which is that if the first budget is established, and has already been established between us and the North Vietnamese, after the first budget, the International Commission must submit its budget to the parties of the agreement. If the parties disapprove the agreement, the old budget continues until the new budget is approved. So, in other words, unless there is draft and inflation, there is no way that the International Commission can be abolished by the refusal of the parties to give them the funds. Finally, there is an international conference which will meet on February 26th at a place which has not yet been decided, which will establish the relationship between this international machinery and international bodies such as the UN or the international conference itself. Now, I must say, if you compare what the original North Vietnamese proposal is and what we asked for, with 12 border teams at all the significant crossing points, are permanently placed there, with 7 mobile teams that can move around to inspect crossing points, and with 26 local teams scattered all over the country, plus the regional teams. We have the fullest coverage that any international machinery has ever had. Now, we have no illusions. If one side is hell-bent on violating this agreement, no international machinery is going to prevent it. All we have to prevent is salami tactics. The other international commission was based in Saigon. It had to get permission to get out into the countryside. It had no fixed locations. It had a total force for all of Indochina of 390. This one has 1160 in South Vietnam alone, most of whom are inspection personnel.
That's the total number of troops left?
1160. Plus Vietnamese guards and other people who are not counting in that total. The International Commission will meet for the first time at 8 o'clock Sunday morning
Monday morning in Saigon within 24 hours of the ceasefire going into effect. Within 48 hours, the seven regional teams will be in play. Within 15 days, the 26 local teams will be in play. And within 30 days, the whole machinery will be in play.
One question. Only car there is. What military forces are the U.S. training the Marines in Vietnam? I'm not talking about uniformed personnel. What about technical and military advisors and people of that type? What is the agreement?
The agreement provides the control of all combat personnel, of all advisors to combat units, of all advisors to military police. Technical military personnel, people who are servicing airplanes, radar, and so forth, are not included in this, but we expect to withdraw those gradually over a period of a year to a year and a half. And we have to discuss this with both the our military people and their military people. So our intention is to withdraw all American personnel that are serving the Vietnamese armed forces, but all military personnel will be withdrawn. For whatever they do, there will be some civilians remaining in technical capacities, in technical service capacities, but these are civilians, not military.
I'm saying, will there be hundreds or thousands?
They are about, don't hold me to the precise figure, I believe there are 1,100 government personnel in all of these categories. None of them associated with any combat activity. All of them, most of them are either personnel administered U.S. Army contracts and accountants, and they will be phased out just as soon as we send strains out of these accountants for the contracts we have left there. And if you're lenient with us, we'll do it faster. That's really a big obstacle here. And the second is personnel that are servicing complex equipment such as radar. And they will be replaced as soon as Vietnamese personnel is transferred. But we're not talking of, I think the total number is about 1,100. To begin with, but that's gradually being phased down. It was, we are reducing it immediately from, I think, about 1,800 to 1,100, and we will phase it out gradually. We will phase it out gradually as South Vietnamese personnel is trained. With the full concurrence, may I say, of the North Vietnamese, there's not any of the seat dipping and of the fancy stepping that occurred in Laos in the 60s. What is happening is known to the North Vietnamese and is fully understood by the base attack for the supervisory personnel of the coordination. The parties of the agreement, the parties to the agreement have to pick up, I think, 23%, and the supervisory people pick up 2% each, and the international conference has the right to make other financial arrangements, but we don't anticipate that they're going to put that as the first item on their agenda. Certainly, I'm bringing the party to Vietnam. There is one team set aside that is not permanently staying in North Vietnam. First of all, during all the prisoner release, will be handled under international supervision. There will be a team.
Red Cross?
No, four countries. And for this purpose, the four countries have a mission there. And in addition, there is one team set aside for periodic visitors to North Vietnam.
Do we plan to have an ongoing mission in Hanoi?
Not at this stage, but as the relations develop, this could occur. But there is no plan at this moment.
Only as it relates to the prisoners of war now.
As it relates to the prisoners of war, we will have to have personnel there to service
as advisory to take their last place of defense, plus the place from which they are leaving.
Brendan, I want to highly commend you for today and thank you too for your way you cut this thing out. None of other people deserve credit, but you do it by far the most. Very persistent here too. I know a little about the turmoil that has been through. You know, I've had it tonight.
You know what you did? Russell and I used to sit in that Oval Office and discuss it Sunday night.
Well, you had what it took for a man. I
want to say one thing about this aid. I believe one more trouble thing now, money.
Section of this is
money we're spending in Laos and Cambodia, especially in the military way, over in Angkor. Cut that thing up some way, take it out as an issue, lead the way to
John, one of the things about the Laotian Cambodian thing, while we, as you know, it's a very
mighty ground. But if we can get that thing moving along, yeah, we had a better look at that one, right, Henry?
Senator Bakerty, Mr. Chairman Bakerty, honestly, you could give us some months without bringing pressure on that particular point, and we won't need it, I don't think.
The provisions of the agreement and the associated discussions will take care of it completely.
That's right.
And that's our goal. Let me tell you, we don't want to be bogged down in Laos, Cambodia, anymore than we want to be bogged down in Vietnam. If Vietnam is another, if this ceasefire goes into effect in Laos, as we have every reason to be within a matter of weeks, if then the foreign troops are withdrawn from all sides, and you know what I'm talking about, then the expenses which ensue in you will, in effect, disappear, almost total.
Well, that would clear the atmosphere more than I want. As you know, John, all of you know, our air activities in Laos have been enormous.
Part of what the CIA is supposed to do.
But these things we have is a wooden process. We have well on the road to a formal solution. And the Cambodian one is messier because of the Chinese factor, and we have to do it more subtly. But that's not where we have our biggest messages anyway. But that I think we can solve.
And what now? We can do this. This is for our force levels.
And our naval forces offshore.
With those plans.
There's nothing in the agreement that affects those.
But I mean, what is this now?
That's our decision.
That is our decision. As I understand it, in the immediate future, until the thing settles down, we will substantially maintain our forces in Thailand. I will expect that our carrier forces are Vietnam because we are heavily over deployed. As the trips know, we have had about 6 carriers there.
So we would have to make a readjustment there.
Totally outside of the agreement. This is not required by the agreement.
What we're doing is carrying these are going to have to carry the
aircraft for an awful jet station. On station, get back to a more normal rotation. As you know, some of the troubles we've had on the carriers have been due to the fact that they've had to be on station for so long that all the tensions have been exacerbated. So we will expect to go back to a more normal rotation, which means a somewhat smaller.
Do we have any experience at all that the North Vietnamese will diminish their strength in Laos and Cambodia?
They will totally withdraw. They will totally withdraw from Laos and Cambodia.
That's a great thing.
Whether they do or not,
The agreement says they will withdraw their forces from Laos and Cambodia.
The difference between Laos and Cambodia, the withdrawal thing, would
mean that something is there
for our forces, because North Vietnam does not deny that they have forces from Laos and Cambodia. It's only in South Vietnam that you have this gobbledygook to the effect that they have no forces
there. Which is actually not against our interest. It is not in our interest to nail down the proposition that they have forces in South Vietnam. My point is this, if they don't take much strength there, this war may start all over again.
According to the agreement, now, it's not unknown, no agreement is history that they break an agreement. But according to the agreement, they are obliged to withdraw all their forces from Laos and Cambodia in how many days? Within 90 days of the ceasefire, in Cambodia,
there's no inspection.
I want to say I'm very much a little bit. I congratulate you. It's been a little longer than I hope, but I'm very glad you got me.
we have here is we've got our prisoner.
We have more than that.
We've got peace, not only for America, but peace, at least fragile as it may be, for all of the people of Indochina, and certainly for Vietnam for a while. Oh, there will be episodes, and you will reach it and see on the TV every week that something's going to happen here and there. And we also have, and this is very important, at least a chance for the South Vietnamese to determine their own future, and thanks to the Vietnamization program, their abilities to defend that chance by themselves without our help. Now, that to me is much better than to have taken another world. It would have been much easier, believe me. And I was not tempted, but many of my advisors were tempted throw up our hands, particularly after the election, and say, take anything, get out, the American people will be relieved, get our prisoners, and let the whole thing down the drain. We could have. But whenever I might have been tempted to that, there comes into my mind's eye the picture of POW one. I met her first in 1969. I've seen her at every one of these gatherings since. She's a tiny thing. I think she's from Colorado. She had four children. One was born after her husband was taken to POW. Been a POW for 5 years. She kept saying, even when there were hundreds of thousands marching around this gap, there were resolutions being passed and sent and so forth, saying, get out. She said, we didn't fight this war for our prisoners. Don't let our people die for nothing. And we're willing to wait till we get the right kind of a peace. I'm not suggesting this peace is perfect. No peace that is negotiated is perfect. The only one that is perhaps perfect in many things is unconditional surrender. And I may say that has serious shortcomings too, to be accomplished. But I do say this is a peace that can work and give the people of Southeast Asia a chance to determine their own future. And I can only say thank God for those who stood by, and with great respect, as I say, for those who had their gift. Thank God for also a lot of brave men who went out there. We didn't want to go to war anymore. We didn't want to go to war anymore. Brave, we all talked about. They gave their lives. Some of them became prisoners. We ought to be damn proud. Thank you.
right. Not that I didn't get it.
That's true.
Tom, you got the brother picture.
Well, this week.
My brother, I was just talking. We couldn't have some kind of a resolution or a prayer, somebody thanking the people of the United States and grateful for their war ending. Thanking
my people. Something like that. Let me say, I think it would be very good, but I am the last one that can suggest it, because it's going to look like it's a self-serving thing.
That's right.
But did that come from you folks, you know, on a bipartisan basis, and sort of pull everybody together? I mean, there are people that disagree on this.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, as we looked around the room today after Matthew left, the only one that was still trying to go ahead and say, you know, every one of the attacks, everyone around here has supported what we've been doing, you know, virtually all the time.
Jack suggested that we don't want part of the Congress to do it, the other part not to do it. So we're
great. You and Bob, you wish to say to I would be a great thing. And appreciation of our
people
and our men who fought our servicemen. Appreciation for
Whatever comes to your stuff,
we'll work with you. I mean, but let me say, the idea is yours.
That's mine. I'm from Congress, right? It's Jack. It's a self-serving thing.
First, we get some technical help. We could put together some ideas.
Well,
Dick Cook, and we get some.
If you could put the best one on to do that, is Ray Price. Ray Price is the man who's available. You can
work with me on both the inaugural.
Because it ought to be that we ask for it, not that we promote it.
I'll make Ray available.
It
doesn't
say
anything at all.
Is that
right? All? Why don't you do another? You've got other writers when they help.
So what
are
they
here? People outside.
Yeah.
Rice to do a like Rice.
Now there's an idea.
Rice, we ask.
Good.
Done.
You don't have to answer anything. Done. Bob, easy. We don't have to say that they'll let
it down.
But,
we ought to know.